This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hello and welcome to this week's show of Property Matters, where we talk all things property. I'm Greg Watson here on MPR. Lovely to have your company today. Got a bit of a mixed bag today. I just trawled through the internet and opened a whole lot of housing news on my browser here so I can have a little look through, just based on a bunch of articles that have been in the news in the last week or two that I thought you might be interested in. So a bit of a mixed bag, bit of property management, bit of landlording, bit of what's happening with the housing market, and some general stories as well. So we'll rip into it. And this article that I found from Esther Taunton of Stuff says, "What's next for the housing market? Winter is coming and it's shaping up to be another difficult one for the housing market," QV says. The property data firm has published its latest update showing what little momentum the market still had going into autumn has all but evaporated. They say the economy is doing it tough right now. High interest rates continue to bite, inflation remains stubbornly high, and the unemployment rate is rising, QV operations manager James Wilson said. Business confidence is low and the cost of living pressures remain a significant challenge for many households. Amidst this, a surplus of real estate listings is helping to maintain the downward pressure on prices. So here's some of this in numbers. Just before I do that, I'll just mention that in our area, Manawatu, Whanganui, prices are fairly stable compared to a year ago. Very little change, up or down. In fact, let's go back to the national figures. 0.1%. The average home value increased by just 0.1% in the 3 months to the end of April to $926,772. And that's a significant slowdown from the 2.2% quarterly home value growth recorded at the end of March. The next figure is $136,993. The national average home value might be 2.7% higher than at the same time last year, but it's still 12.9% below the market peak in 2021. So while it's moved up just very slightly, and we'll look at some regional fluctuations here. In April, Auckland's three-month rolling average was negative for the third straight month to negative 0.7%. Napier, negative 0.2%. Hastings, negative 0.7%. Palmerston North, negative 0.1%. So that's not much change at all in our region. Wellington region was in the plus of 0.6. So over a 12-month period, it just shows you that things are very static compared to those massive changes that we had leading up to a couple of years ago. The next number is 3. Only 3 regions, Rotorua 3.6%, Dunedin 2.1%, and Invercargill 3.2%, bucked the downward trend in the last quarter. However, that could change as winter set in, Wilson said. The overall trend appears to be a property market that is in a sort of stasis until conditions improve, which almost certainly won't be until after winter. So just a comment on that. Generally, the housing market slows in winter. We've got a lot of properties in Palmerston North, Manawatu, for sale at the moment. It's somewhere between 400 and 500, which is a lot of choice for buyers. That means that with supply and demand, it's quite a good time to buy relative to where it has been. In fact, it's probably the best time to buy it has been in a few years. So if you were in the market, that's great. However, the next stat, 2025, says the interest rate pressure will unlikely ease before next year, Wilson said. Given the circumstances, a flat market is to be expected. It will provide a stable foundation to step up off when interest rate pressure finally begins to ease. But that won't be likely until late this year, if at all in 2024. So in the meantime, mortgage holders are finding ways to hold on and banks are being supportive where possible. The 80% is the next figure. The reintroduction of 80% interest deductibility for landlords hadn't led large numbers of investors back into the market, Wilson said, and the looming introduction of debt-to-income restrictions is likely to hamper their ability to purchase. Meanwhile, first home buyers had the upper hand, provided they had stable employment and finance in place. Although getting finance and being in a position to service a mortgage in this economic environment certainly isn't easy, buyers now control the narrative in most areas. They have the time on their side and plenty of options to choose from. So what have we noticed? Generally in the market, we've noticed more buyers coming into the market, a number of more investors and first home buyers. However, as the article mentions, it's not a big change at all. Further south, though, in this article in The Post, says Wellington rises above the flat property market. Now, the Wellington region goes from Kapiti all the way down. So they say that even though Wellington's regional rate of home value growth has flattened, it's still performing better than most other areas. And this is really from the same data. But just in case you have property down that area, and I work on at least half of my week in Kapiti, so for the third straight month, Kapiti Coast saw the largest positive quarterly growth. The district's average home value went up by 3.3% to $850,000, with average values in Upper Hutt and Porirua increasing 2.6% to $766,000 and 1.6% to $838,000, respectively. So more positive in that area. The average home value is steady in Wellington City at just over $1 million and down by 0.5 to just under $800,000 in Lower Hutt. So further south, things are looking pretty good. I also see, just as an aside, that the Ōtaki to north of Levin highway is still on the roads of national significance. That will increase property prices coming up the west coast from Wellington. You can see the effect it has in Kapiti. The prices there have gone really well, and then that's going to come further north as it becomes a lot easier to get into property, I guess, a lot easier to get into the city, I should say, with regards to transport from those properties. In other news, for those of you who are compulsive reality TV watchers, the Block NZ has been cancelled as the home's near completion. It's by Colleen Hawkes on stuff.co.nz. So just as four townhouses in Browns Bay are readied for contestants on the Block NZ, Warner Brothers Discovery has cancelled the 11th season of the show and intends to sell off the houses. You probably heard about this. Speculation had been rife that the show would not go ahead this year due to the cost cutting by the company, which has already scrapped the AM show and the project, and announced plans to scrap News Hub. A new TV news service will be provided by Stuff from July 6th, 2024. A spokesperson from Warner Brothers Discovery said today, "When we announced our business restructure earlier this year, we indicated that Warner Brothers Discovery would no longer make fully funded local shows, which includes The Block NZ. Existing sponsors had been told that we would contact them if the show was going ahead and they would have the first right of renewal." On February the 28th, when the decision to remodel the business was announced, James Gibbons, a president of Asia Pacific Warner Brothers Discovery, said, "We also know that New Zealanders have come to love our local shows, from Dancing with the Stars to The Block NZ to Black Coast Vanishings. Free-to-air and news are expensive businesses to run. Put simply, the economic headwinds means the returns are not there." Gibbons also said, "We're acutely aware of our position in the local media landscape and what this means for our people and for the country as a whole. There was no single trigger that caused this, but rather it was a combination of negative events in New Zealand and globally. The impacts of the economic downturn have been severe. The bounce back has not materialised as expected." The long-standing host of The Block NZ, Mark Richardson, said he's not overly surprised the show has been cancelled. He says, "When we were told a year or so ago it was on hold, I thought it was unlikely to come back, and I've moved on." So The Block was a property development that was televised, and property and TV are hard environments at the moment, both of them. It's tough on both fronts. We shouldn't be blindsided when these things happen. It is disappointing, he says, to see the end of the block and what it means to the industry. It was a cool show and people loved watching it. And for many of the contestants, it was a life-changing opportunity. With regards to the properties themselves, those properties will be brought to market as per normal, according to the article, and I'm just paraphrasing, skim reading as we go. The reason for that is that the block had the first right to them, but now that they've almost finished, they'll just go ahead and finish those and sell them on the open market. So now talking about, as we were a few minutes ago, Kapiti and prices there, there is an article in Stuff I found interesting by Belinda Moffat recently, which says, should I buy a coastal property? So it's a question. Belinda Moffat, by the way, is a chief executive of the Real Estate Authority. So she, in this article, she answers questions from people buying. And here is the question. Kia ora, Belinda. My son is ready to buy his first home, but he tells me he has his heart set on a beachfront property somewhere. I get it. He and his family will love to surf, go fishing, and walk their dog on the beach. But I worry about things like damage to a house that's so close to the sea, not to mention climate change risks. My concern is that they could find themselves in a place with high ongoing maintenance costs and that could even lose value if the sea level rises. What advice should I give my son to make sure he considers and can manage all the risks that come with buying a house by the beach? Which I thought was a really good question. Belinda says in the answer, it's lovely to see that you're looking out for your son as he and his family set out on their home buying journey. In New Zealand, many people find the idea of coastal living attractive. Beachfront homes are highly sought after. That said, you do raise some important concerns, and as with any property purchase, it's important that your son gains a thorough understanding of exactly what he's looking to buy, plus the specific things to be aware of with coastal properties. So a beachfront property lifestyle will seem idyllic for some and may certainly be at the top of your son's wish list. But if he hasn't already, I recommend he and his family sit down and go over all their goals and priorities in terms of their future home. This will help identify what features are essential and non-negotiable for them. Is it, for example, are there things they might need to compromise on? Like they might discover they'd be happy to live a short walking distance from the beach if they're unable to find a suitable property right on the coast. But here are some of the questions that you'd want to ask. What sort of property do you need now? What are you likely to need for the next 5 to 10 years? Would you want to take on a property that needs renovation, or would you prefer something that's in great condition when you buy it? How willing and able are you to do the work to maintain a property yourself? If you need to employ skilled tradespeople, how much could you budget for maintenance each year? In terms of preferred locations, have you considered all the practical day-to-day factors, including proximity of schools, work, transport hubs, grocery shopping, and other amenities? So if an analysis like that supports your son's preference for a beachfront property, it's time to consider the potential issues alongside the lifestyle attractions. So let's have a look at that. The first one is natural hazards. So before you buy any property, the Real Estate Authority recommends you consider what, if any, natural hazards and risks may apply and how you may be able to reduce the risk of damage. It would be prudent to investigate particular hazards when looking at coastal property. Key risks include flood zones, storm impacts, rising sea levels, coastal erosions, strong winds, stability of cliffs or steep slopes, and saltwater intrusion. Flip, when you hear all of those, that would just about terrify you. But again, if you do the research well, you should hopefully be okay. Another good step, it says, would be to research any recent weather events or severe weather that damaged property and needed repairing. The Real Estate Authority has a property checker tool on their consumer website, settled.govt.nz, and they suggest that's a good place to check about the risks. By providing a few pieces of information on a house, such as age, location, and building materials, it will generate a tailored list about that property to check or look into further. And this tool will help your son in knowing what to ask the vendor or their agent. Now, I used this tool myself personally recently, and it was really interesting. It's not specific, but it certainly raises the attention on what sort of things to look for. Civil Defence's National Emergency Management Agency website has information on tsunami zones, and the local council holds information relevant to a property. They produce LIM reports, which should identify specific erosion hazards and flood zones. The property title and the LIM report may include details of any flooding history as well as potential flooding hazards for that specific property. Some councils even provide flood maps and or have maps designed for assessing severe weather exposure to individual properties. They use the example here of Wellington City Council that has free maps showing flood zones and modelling sea level rise on their website. I've got a feeling that the Palmerston North City Council also has flood zone maps. You can also ask a real estate agent or the seller, if it's a private sale, if the property has been affected by storm or flood erosion, whether there has been an EQC claim. If an EQC claim has been settled, you should confirm with the vendor whether the remediation work has been completed. If there has been damage to the property as a result of a natural hazard and a defect exists, the licensed real estate professional selling the house is legally required, under the Real Estate Authority Code of Conduct, to disclose that information to buyers, and your son should obtain this information if it's a private sale. What else with regards buying a property in a coastal area? Condition and maintenance. So it's important when buying any home that you get an accredited property inspector to check it as part of pre-purchase due diligence. There are experts in identifying defects and maintenance issues. Also, they can identify parts of the home that will need repairing or are likely to require regular ongoing maintenance. Now, just as an aside, when we had the really busy market recently where there were multiple offers on properties, people were removing clauses to try and make their offers more attractive. But certainly having a property inspector check the property would be a clause that I would suggest that you always put in. There are also specific maintenance considerations typical for coastal properties. Saltwater can damage certain building materials and exposed electrical components. Your son could also find himself cleaning salt from his windows or removing storm debris from his front porch more frequently. So a good idea would be to keep an eye out for rust on vehicles and other metal surfaces, as saltwater can speed up the oxidation process that causes it. And in fact, in the building code, when a property is built within, and don't quote me on this, I believe it's within 500 metres of the coast, the building materials are quite different that you need to build with. Don't quote me on that, but there is something there if you wanted to investigate. The next thing with buying a coastal property, of course, is insurance. Checking whether you can insure the property that you're keen to buy and knowing the cost of that insurance is always important. And many banks or mortgage lenders will want proof of insurability to confirm finance. Regarding climate change risks, insurance companies may look closely at what cover they can provide for a coastal and clifftop property or property in low-lying areas that may suffer from seawater inundation due to the increased risk of severe weather events or rising sea levels. Premiums may be more expensive, exclusions may be added, or insurance cover may be withdrawn for some properties as the risks change. Again, I strongly encourage your son to obtain information about the insurance status of any house he and his family may wish to buy and discuss with his lawyer. So all of that being said, the benefits of beachside living can also be significant. I understand that some studies have linked living near the sea to improved health and well-being, and that it can enable an active yet relaxed lifestyle and provide a regular connection to nature. So while keeping that dream home in mind, the most important thing for a prospective buyer to do is their homework and know exactly what they're getting into. So that was an article there by Belinda Moffat, some very good advice there that you can apply to all homes, but also how can be applied particularly to coastal properties. Now we'll just move on to what's happening with first home buyers at the moment. And this article from Stuff by Colleen Hawkes says how first home buyers are stepping up to the mark. So with rents climbing, it's not surprising to see first home buyers taking full advantage of lower property prices and reduced competition, as seen in figures released this week by CoreLogic. Figures showed that first home buyers accounted for 26% of property sales in the first quarter, well above the long-term average of 21%. But how do you fund your first home? Dustin Lindale, an advisor for the First Home Buyers Club, says accessing KiwiSaver's funds remains the number one way people get on the property ladder. But most first home buyers struggle to find the 20% deposit, usually managing between 10 and 20%. And while most lenders currently demand a 20% deposit, selected banks offer first home loans underwritten by Kāinga Ora that require just a 5% deposit. So these banks will usually offer an interest rate that is lower than a rate you'd get from a bank offering funds under the LVR restrictions, Lindale says. But if you need to go with a bank offering funds under the LVR terms, in other words, with a deposit under 20%, it's ideal if you can structure a loan so you're paying it down more quickly with the aim of acquiring that 20% equity. A passive increase in home prices will help you get there, but that's not really happening at the moment. To access a cheaper first home loan, there are numerous conditions clearly spelled out by Kāinga Ora. You must be a New Zealand citizen, a permanent resident, or a resident visa holder who is ordinarily resident in New Zealand. You must also be a first home buyer or a previous homeowner in a similar financial position to a first home buyer. And if you need to have a before tax income of from the last 12 months of $95,000 or less for an individual buyer without dependents, or $150,000 or less for an individual buyer with one or more dependents. You can have $150 or less combined for two or more buyers regardless of the number of dependents. In addition, you have to have a minimum deposit that's at least 5% of the purchase price of the home you're interested in buying. You must be purchasing a home to be your primary place of residence, so it's not a rental property. You must not own any other property or land, which doesn't include ownership of Māori land. You must be purchasing a property of less than 1 hectare. And as well as that, you have to pay a 0.5 lender's mortgage insurance premium and loan application fee, so it's a little dearer. And, of course, you'll need to meet the conditions of the lending bank, which will need to be satisfied that you can service the loan. So Lindale says banks have loosened lending restrictions recently and are taking a more pragmatic approach to borrowers. If you've been dining out a fair bit, for example, you could expect to have a reasonable conversation about this. And if you explain that this is something you'll be addressing, they will take that on board. What about using KiwiSaver funds? If you're a first home buyer and have been contributing to KiwiSaver for 3 or more years, you can withdraw all your funds except $1,000 to put towards your first home. You need to be intending to live in the home you buy, and there are other conditions which your mortgage advisor or bank can advise on. It's also, if you've had your account, KiwiSaver account, for 3 years, you may be eligible for a first home grant, and that's up to $10,000 for a brand new home or $5,000 for an existing home. How much you can receive depends on your income and the type of home you want to buy. And to be eligible for a first home grant, you have to be over 18. The same earning restrictions apply as for the first home loan. Other requirements include agreeing to live in your new house for at least 6 months, and the house you purchase must be within the regional house price caps. So what are the price caps for first home grants? They vary according to the region, and they're higher in the main centres where the median house values are higher, and in some areas they are higher for new builds. In Auckland, for example, the current price cap to qualify for both existing homes and new builds is $875,000, Hamilton $650,000, Wellington $750,000, Christchurch $575,000. Many smaller towns have the price cap of $400,000. Unfortunately, I can't tell you what it is here in Palmerston North. I'm unaware at the moment what that is. Another way that you can look at getting into a home, according to this article, is the Bank of Mum and Dad. So a large percentage of first-home buyers will have parental help to boost their deposit. Your bank or lender will require your parents or others to sign a gifting declaration stating that funds provided are a gift and not a loan. Gibson, who has 4 young children, has slightly different plans. You'd like to think my kids won't need deposits bumped up by me, but in all likelihood they will. I might be more inclined to buy a property with them 50-50. That way, for parents, it's still to protect the future. Well, it'd seem a better idea to buy half the property, and then that could be sold, or you could get that back if the house is sold at some stage in future. Another thing she says is forget value-added projects. Gibson finds it frustrating that banks are stopping young people from buying homes where they can add value through improvements. Banks are now saying if a house needs a new roof or a few weatherboards replaced, they won't lend on it. They're saying no to anything that requires work. But banks need to be mindful that you're not buying the writs. It's not helping young people get ahead in life. That might have to be a compromise, and it's not the only one. The CoreLogic report this week also noted that some first home buyers are compromising on location and property type to get a foot in the market, but they are making a start. And to go back to what I was talking about a little bit earlier, it is still a good time to buy relative to the market and where the market has been. And in fact, this article from Stuff is literally about that, from Imogen Wells. It says why it's a good time to be a first home buyer. So the weaker property prices mean first home buyers are getting more bang for buck. So thanks to the median prices falling to $695, and this they're quoting Kelvin Davidson, a Newsable chief property economist. He says it's more first home buyers being able to purchase bigger homes rather than townhouses or apartments. First home buyers' purchases are up in many New Zealand locations, as I mentioned recently. That's up to 26% of buyers, and that's much higher than the long-term average. And above-average first home buyer activity is expected to continue this year and possibly next. So Davidson believes the first home buyer market will trend will continue into 2025. However, acknowledged increases in unemployment could detract from the market and be a reason to be cautious about the housing outlook. So that's all that we've got this week here on Property Matters. We've been listening to myself, Greg Watson, on Manawatū People's Radio, Te Reo, I Te Rangi o Ngā Tāngata o Manawatū. So it's been lovely having your company. You can find Property Matters by just doing a simple Google search of Property Matters and Greg Watson, or finding it wherever good podcasts are found. But of course, this is produced by MPR.nz, Manawatū People's Radio, if you ever want to find any of the recent shows, and a lot of other good shows on there as well. So thanks for listening today, and I hope you have a wonderful week.
If you enjoy this MPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.